accession number 19067, reel 3.
Fred McLeod, reel 3. So right. Where did you end up?
Bombay, and we went from Bombay by rail and we finished up in come through to how do they call it now?
Dulali?
No,
Calcutta,
that's it. We come through to Calcutta.
So, what were your first impressions of India?
Well, I don't know. The thing to me about Calcutta was the stench. It stunk. Curry. There was always a smell of curry in the air. There was always a smell of what can I say? Cow muck and perspiration. Your own body odor. You could never seem to. You really have to get acclimatized, and you really can't explain to you. You seem at times to be ashamed of yourself because you just stink, sweating and whatnot, body odor. You couldn't get rid of it, and there was only one way you could get rid of it, and that was to take a shower. And by the time you were still perspiring, even though when you was under the shower it was so hot, you really have to get acclimatized. And there was one thing I won't forget was periodically, about once a month, you'd go on parade and you'd take your mug with you, and you could either put your mug in or you got a drink of this water, and it was salt water, and you took it, you know, orally, is it, drink it, or you could have these salt tablets. And I'll always remember there was only one coloured chap in our company, and I think it was in the old battalion, and it was the company barber. His name will come to me. He used to say, same as us, he was sweating and all the sweat through. And we went, he still had to do PT. And was playing this six or seven a side football. And I'll always remember him. He jumped on this table and he took his vest off. And he said, Noel's a black so and so, you know. Noel's a black bastard, you know, that's what he said. And his body was covered with the salt that he sweated out of it himself, you know. And Fort William, that's where I was trying to think of it, in Calcutta. And it's a lovely place, is Calcutta. there's there's a big park there in Calcutta, just on the outskirts of Calcutta, and it's somewhat like Hyde Park, but it's a lot more prettier than Hyde Park. You know, there's parrots of all colours in and out the trees, monkeys. There's that what they call the Great Banyan Tree of India. And when we was there, I don't know, but there was 3,000, there was about 3,000 and odd stems or trunks on this banyan tree. And a banyan tree, it grows like this. Side shoots are coming out all the time, all the time. And then periodically, the branch gets so thick and dependent on the main trunk that it throws a sapling out, and it comes down vertically into the soil and it roots, and then once it roots, it sets off again. And they call it the Great Banyan Tree of India, and it's true, is it? The Great Banyan Tree of India. How many trunks it is? How many? I can't remember how many years old it was, but centuries. And there's banana trees and all sorts. A banyan tree is it's some sort of fruit tree. And these banyan, well, they're like stems, and they're at their any thickness, and you can start peeling them. And this is true. This is quite true. They can build anything. They cut these stems, and then the skin, there's like a skin that goes all the way around the, and it's supple. And it contains a lot of sap. And you've got to be careful, because if somebody held you and wanted to do you in the arm, in the heat, you could burn these like raffias off these joints round your arm or your leg or out like that. And as they start losing the sap, so they start decreasing. As well, still, you know, they do you a hell of a lot of damage. And these Indian natives and whatnot, this is the way they make their what they call bashes, the houses, you know, in the bush and whatnot. And that's the way they don't use no nails or anything like that. They just use these banyan strips, and they bind them, you know, make like teeth and. It's good the way they do it. I was only saying to my wife the other day about these chaps that work alongside the tailors, what's called daisies, and they just had an ordinary singer sewing machine, hand. What they call them, and propelled. And he made me a suit, a jacket, trousers. And it said, come back tomorrow, to measure me, come back tomorrow, and it was made, you know, on the roadside. Quite good.
Coming back to the chap who had the salt on his skin, was he having a hard time then?
No, they made him up, he was a lance corporal, and they made him a corporal, and he was the battalion barber, and he was a good barber as well, and he commanded a lot of respect. There was a lot of banter, this, that, and the other. It was your black so-and-so, and this, that, and the other, but quite true. It's quite true, is it? And I've seen it on television here about the Grenadier Coldstream Guards. And it said, watch the man in the middle. And it showed him on television, and lo and behold, he was the only coloured soldier in that battalion of Grenadier Guards. And like this chap, he was the only coloured chap in our regiment, in the 9th Battalion, the Border Regiment. But it was good. It was. And how he'd got in the army, he'd got called up, and he had a chair, a barber's chair, in some haircutting salon in London. And he paid for the chair to whoever it belonged to, and that was his living. But he said that he answered this letter, called up, and he finished up with us.
Which part of the world had he come from originally?
What do they call that big rock in the Mediterranean?
Pantelleria? Gibraltar?
Would be Gibraltar. Gibraltar. Yeah, the rock of Gibraltar, that's where I was from. His name was Tony Evangelo. That's what they call him. Antonio Evangelo. Yeah.
Do you think he was happy in the battalion?
He was. He was one of us. He was, no doubt.
So you're in Calcutta sometime in 1942. Any other memories from that time?
Yes. I was in Calcutta when Mahatma Gandhi, he was arrested and they put him in jail. And that's when the 9th Battalion in Fort William, was in Fort William. And we went on to full-scale security.
Was there any trouble?
Quite a lot. And there was quite a lot of discrimination. You know, it's funny when you're on IS duty in the city, and we was Fort William, Calcutta. The security it covered everything. Now you could be called on to do I forget what sort of a duty it was, but it started at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it gets very light, same as here, about around about 3:30, 3:45, and you hardly get any twilight, because it's gradually changing as the sun's rising. And all of a sudden, the sun breaks the horizon, and then that's it. It's daylight within. You can see it going across the heavens. And we was in Calcutta, and we also had to do these this duty. And they also were these. You didn't know whether there was. We always said these walking sticks, and you poke them like that. And if they didn't poke them, the walking stick, you try to turn them over. And there was a lot of them had died on the streets, you know. And there was no messing about. There was no messing about. That there used to be the battalion doctor, and he never came out with it of his PU till he was beckoned and called, like. And he used to come, and he used to say, "Oh, he's another stiff. That's it." And he used to, at his like bogey, chuck him on the bogey, take him to this cart, and chuck him in, and. That was it. They used to take them into the force, and whether they was incinerated there or not, I just don't know. But that was one of the. It was a bit scary, was that, you know, because you don't know what you was going into till it happened.
What does PU mean?
Pardon?
What does PU mean?
A PU was what they call a pursuit unit. And it's like, I should imagine they'll do about maybe up to 100 miles an hour. And there was like a nearly as good as a sports car, two seaters, but in the back there was enough room for a Bren gun, you know, and ammunition and whatnot at this side. Pursuit units, that's what they call them. and it was quite good.
But you were on internal security duties.
Yes.
And you were using this pursuit unit.
No. There was usually two pursuit units. There was one forward and one in the rear. You know, one was covering the other because you didn't know what you was going in for. You know, didn't know what you're going out. And like I said, the riots was on. They put Gandhi in the mush, as we used to say. He was in jail, like.
In the what?
In the mush. We used to say the mush. In jail. And we went down Copper, and anybody that knows Calcutta, there's the main road, and they call it Chowringhee Road. And off Chowringhee Road, you know, it's something like Ferrans Way. It's a hell of a lot, but miles and miles long. And there's this Corporation Road off Chowringhee Road. And of course, there was rioting. There was rioting down the road. And they had to do it absolutely by the book. They had to have the Lord Mayor of the city, Calcutta. He had to be in attendance, and he had to go to give the order of disperse peacefully. And he also have two bannermen, one at either side of the road, with it in Urdu and Indian or whatever it was in writing. And there used to be the troops behind them lining the road. On the left and right of the road, two Bren guns, motorized Bren guns, and in the middle there was infantrymen, and usually the officer always used to be in the gutter. Don't ask me why, I don't know, but he was in the gutter, and I was next to this officer, and there was another chap called Matt Nolsey. And there was a chap right on top of this building, about 5 or 6 stories high, and they're tearing slates off, and fell in these slates down. And this officer turned round to this chap, Matt Nolsey, and he said, "Shoot that man," just like that. I lost him. He said, "Who, me, sir?" So I said to him, "Give me your bloody rifle." I'll always remember it like that, and by the time it fired, it disappeared. And the mayor of he always used to give the order, if you don't disperse, they'll open fire. And that was it. They used to give one or two bursts over the top of their heads. And then it was just like frost, they used to disappear. But they always used to have to do it the awkward way, like, and everything stops, and fun and games and whatnot. There was more casualties through the fun and games than what there was, I think, if like a football crowd. Well, it's happened, we saw it, didn't we? With
Hillsborough.
We saw it in England here, when all them people was killed.
You mean they used to trample each
other? That's right, yes. The trampling on people and whatnot.
So, how many times were you called out on internal security?
Well, before you was called, you used to, you see, we was in Fort William as a battalion, and there was 5 companies to a battalion, you see, A, B, C, D, and headquarter company. And you used to get one of these, what they called W company. Now, if you was W company, you wasn't allowed out. You weren't even allowed out, only your toilets in your block and this, that, and the other. But you had to stop in there and on the wall, there was two lights. There was an amber light and a red light. And You could lay on your bed with your equipment, your belt undone like that, and you say, just lay like that, resting, rifle, bayonet, ammunition, and you just watch these lights. And all the time the amber light was on, it was all right. But soon as the amber turned to red, they said, right, lads, go. And that was it. Clipped up that, down. And the platoon trucks was there, you know. There was about, I think, 7 or 8 on there was 2 Bren gunners, and number ones, number twos, and four other ranks. That was to a platoon, what they called a platoon truck. And then off he used to go, to wherever the trouble was or out like that. Sometimes, by the time he'd got there, you was just stood on a ledge. You know, it was beginning to fizzle out. Sometimes, he was called to... Now, this is paramount, is this. Was called out to Howrah Station. And it's one of the biggest railway stations in the world, is Howrah. And it's funny, but it's quite true. As these trains, passenger trains, are leaving for Bombay, Delhi, wherever in India, where they was going, you could bet your life there was more riding on top or on the sides of the trains than what was inside the trains, actually. And it was our job to try to get these, the marauders, that's what it was, get them off, drag them off. And there was only one way you could do it. And like I said about when I was on out with a rifle in one hand, sometimes it was a Colt 45, and a walking stick in the other. And there's not like a bloody acre of walking stick if you use it properly, you know, bang, right across the legs. You know, that's the first thing to do, and then trying to get them off. And the reason for trying to get them off the train was they couldn't get into their own heads. So they was their own enemies. They was all the labs to get killed themselves. Oh, yeah. It wasn't all fun and games. It was it was scary. It was.
But when you were on internal security, did you ever have to open fire?
Well, quite a few times. Quite a few times, like I just said about when I was going down Corporation Road. This chap throwing the bloody slates down.
Down, was that Corporation Road or Chowringhee?
No, Corporation Road is off Chowringhee Road. And shoot that man. And I also remember, and said, oh me. Because shoot a man in cold blood, I mean, that's what I say, a bit scary. But when it comes to you and me, I mean, when was in action, I mean, it was just one of them things. It's either kill or be bloody killed yourself. And I think he was more surprised than when he just said, shoot that man. And he said, who, me? And he finished up on the charge when we got back into the force for disobeying an order. And I was called, but they stood next door to the other side of the officer as second evidence, and all I could say to the officer in that question is I didn't know whether he meant me or him, and it was saying that stopped this chap from, you know, serious bloody punishment, because I think I was as surprised as what he was when he says, shoot that man. And he says, oh, me. And that.
In these internal security duties, did any of the troops get injured or killed?
There's a lot of them got quite, I wouldn't say killed, but a lot of them was walking wounded and whatnot. Like I'm just saying about when people's up there about fire doing this and admitted tin hats on. That was part of the dress, But when it comes to shirt sleeve order, under your equipment, then a slice, it could have half chopped your bloody arm off. Face or out like that.
Did you get injured yourself?
Not on them duties, no. But I was injured in there's a few ways you can get yourself hurt, such as, I don't know whether you've heard of, have you heard of punges?
Oh, is this in Burma?
Yeah, them.
Oh, we'll come on to that later. Yeah, we'll come on to the Burma. But yeah. Still in Calcutta.
Oh, yeah.
What were all these riots about?
It was religious, wasn't it? Because he was Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, he was the head, the leader of the, what they call the untouchables, the lowest of the low. You know, the sweeper class, and they're not supposed to have any class about them. You know, they're supposed to be the high class Indian coming down to the sweeper class, and the sweeper, he's the bottom of the pile. He has no rights whatsoever.
What was the attitude of the Indians towards soldiers like yourself? Were they hostile or friendly or what?
Well, it's funny because we used to do guards where there was a white man and an Indian, or a white man and a coloured soldier, and it usually used to go like this: the white man trying to talk to the Indian in Hindustani, you see, and you got the Indian trying to pick the white man's brains, still trying to speak pidgin English to him, which is right, like. They're both trying to learn. And I mean, I could speak Hindustani nearly fluently. And while I was in Fort William, I went on the police. And the reason of going on the battalion police was, You had there was main guards in Calcutta, and there was Plassey Gate, Howrah Gate, Calcutta Main Gate, and another gate. I can't remember what the other gate was, but there was north, south, east, and west of entrances to the fort. And Fort William, it was a marvellous, wonderful place. It was really. And it had its own cinema. You no need to go out. They introduced a monetary ticket, what they call a light. A light something card, and they had values to it. You see, there was one anna, two anna. That was so. There was Doana, Ekana, Charana, 12 annas, and a rupee. And you'll see, usually go like that, 16 annas, one rupee, 17 annas, one buck shilling, this, that, and the other. That's how it used to go. And 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 4, 8, and the rupee. Silver rupee or a paper rupee. Anybody with any sense won't ever pay for a rupee. Ever see, like a £2 piece that we've got. Anybody with any sense, they won't take a £1 coin. They'll have a £2, you see, because the value's there. They'll never depreciate one way or the other. And